Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, 2/22/2015. This is episode 1164. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by RingCentral, the business phone system that's in the cloud and in the brick house. RingCentral now integrates with Google for Work. Awesome. Try RingCentral with a 30-day risk-free trial at ringcentral.com or call 800-543-9980 and use the promo code TWIT. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, smartphones, home theater, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from the U.S. and Canada if you want to call. I was thinking smartphones versus cell phones. I found an old semi-smartphone the other day, my Nokia N93 iPhone. Funniest looking phone. It looks like a camcorder. It actually, the Nokia was selling this as kind of a camcorder slash phone before the iPhone, long before the iPhone. This must have been 2005 or 2006. But it has a memory chip in it. And I'm thinking, this is a new form of archaeology. Have you looked through your old gadgets to see what memory cards are in there? I'm dying to find out what's on that card, but it's some weird form factor, the early SD card, the little skinny ones, and I have to find a way to read it. And of course, I didn't save the cable that charges the phone. Foolish me. And this was in the dim, dark days when phones all had different chargers. Remember that? You get a new phone, you have to get a new charger, and you couldn't. It was, you had to get more than one if you were, you lost it, or you had to travel, you wanted to have it charging at work, and crazy. Now everything, thanks to the European Union for this one, all the phones charge with the same micro USB cable. Isn't that nice? So convenient. Of course, laptops don't. Every laptop has its own special adapter because it's, I think mostly because it's big bucks. Apple patents their adapter, the MagSafe adapter, so that if you want to make a MagSafe adapter, you have to license it from them for, I'm sure, what is a lot of money, because I don't see anybody else making one. Or maybe they just don't even license it. Maybe they just say, you know, we're going to keep that $95 to ourselves for the $4 part. We like that. It's a good deal. It's what we call profit. Companies will do a lot for profit. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but I know it's a new audience today, so I might as well mention again the reprehensible, shameful, shocking thing that Lenovo did for profit. I take a little bit of the blame because we've put so much pressure on these companies to bring the price down of PCs. And when you can buy a PC for $200, you know that's barely covering the cost of materials. They probably break even on the hardware when you're getting these cheap PCs. But how do they make it up? They've got to make profit somehow. They make it up by putting trialware, junkware on the laptop, getting people like McAfee, which is currently owned by Intel, to pay them money. You know that. When you get a PC these days, they're larded up with all sorts of junk. Microsoft's tried to stem this flood because they know it makes Windows look bad. They have a program called the Signature PC, and if you buy a PC at the Microsoft store, including a Lenovo PC, it'll just be pure Windows. There won't be anything extra on there. No adware, no trialware. I still can't recommend getting a Lenovo. Did you hear what they did? They got caught in September. And once the hue and cry rose to a fever pitch, they knocked it off last month in January. But they were embedding something on some, but not all, but many Lenovo laptops, all the low-cost consumer-grade laptops. They were embedding something really appalling. It was aimed at intercepting your internet traffic as you visited web pages and putting ads on the web pages. Bad enough. I mean, that right there, that's offensive, isn't it? If you have a web page and somebody with a Lenovo computer sees additional ads on your page, that's offensive. But that's not what I'm really mad at for. What I'm mad at them for is this software that they used to do, this Snapfish, in order to do this, had to do something we call a man-in-the-middle attack. You played Monkey in the Middle, right, where you try to keep the ball away from the guy in the middle. This is the opposite. The guy in the middle gets everything. As you're surfing the net, the guy in the middle, Lenovo, sees everything you're doing, even, and this is where it's really reprehensible, even on secure sites. So you may think, well, I'm connected to my bank or Amazon. When I'm buying something, when I'm submitting a credit card, that's encrypted, secure. It's just between me and the vendor. No one else can see it, right? Unless you're using a Lenovo laptop, because then Lenovo can see it. It's intercepting secure traffic using this Superfish program. Superfish, if you go to the Superfish website, they say, oh, no, what we do, that's an Israeli company, we're doing image recognition. But then you dig a little deeper. One of their products introduces ads on web pages as you're surfing. Revenue to Lenovo, right, the Superfish customer. But in order to do that, they have to break secure sockets. And that is reprehensible. That breaks without your knowledge, without your consent, breaks your connection to the internet. And when they do that, breaks your security. The connection still works, but it breaks your... And all of a sudden, if you're wondering why you're seeing ads on your banking site... But by doing that, not only are they violating a fundamental security protocol on the internet, but they're opening a hole to all sorts of bad guys. We don't know when they started doing it. One of their customers caught them in September. Took them a while. Now they said, "Oh, it was a mistake. We were fools. Now they say, "Oh, but we're going to fix it." Not too late. Here's the updated Lenovo statement on Superfish. As we said yesterday, Lenovo is exploring every action we can to help our users address the concerns around Superfish, the virus that we put on your computer without your knowledge or consent. In addition to the manual removal instructions currently available online, we've released an automated tool. If you have a Lenovo laptop, I would go and get this Lenovo tool. We'll put a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com. We're working with Mike McAfee and Microsoft to have the Superfish software and certificate quarantined or removed to have it identified as the virus that it is. These actions have already started and will automatically fix the vulnerability. Please note the use of the word vulnerability. Oh, I could just see the lawsuits. They have just admitted that they have put a vulnerability on your computer. We have ordered Superfish preloads to stop, and we shut the server connections down in January based on user complaints. Well, yes. However, we didn't know about this potential security vulnerability till yesterday. Oh, please. They say it doesn't impact ThinkPads, any tablets or desktops or smartphones, enterprise server or storage device. It's just the consumer computers, the ones they make the least amount of money on. Those are the ones that they decided to monetize on your behalf. Friends, I apologize. I have recommended Lenovo laptops many times on this show for years. Never again. And my strong recommendation is, regardless of the product, that you not buy a Lenovo product. You know, Lenovo bought Motorola, the smartphone company from Google, last year, and now runs the Motorola division. The Motorola guys are still in Chicago. I'm sure that they are not really part of this. But I think we need to send a strong message to Lenovo, and more importantly, not to Lenovo, but to every other company. This, to use the words of President Bush, this will not stand. We got to draw a line in the sand, and we need to punish Lenovo. And frankly, you'd be foolish to trust them ever again. The fact that at any point they thought this was a good idea or acceptable behavior shows a complete lack of understanding of conscience. Appalling. And I hope that we look at other companies carefully, make sure they're not doing it. At this point, the good news is there are many other places to go to get your Windows PCs. I would strongly urge you not to go to Lenovo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, I guess if you bought a Lenovo laptop and you immediately erased everything on the hard drive and put Linux on it, you'd be all right. Or get a clean copy of Windows and install Windows on it, you'd be all right. I guess. But the problem is once a company crosses that line where they put viruses on your system before they ship it intentionally, once they cross that line, there's really nothing stopping them from doing worse. Last week, we learned that from the Snowden leaks, that the NSA – actually, this wasn't a Snowden leak, was it? We learned from Kaspersky, this Kaspersky antivirus company, that some governmental spy agency – could be the NSA, could be Britain's HCQ, could be a lot of people, GCHQ, could be a lot of people, but some governmental agency – had developed the ability to corrupt firmware on hard drives, all makes of hard drives. And what they were apparently doing is intercepting, I guess maybe this was Snowden, they were intercepting the hard drives in the mail as they were shipped to customers. They were just, this is another man-in-the-middle attack. They're just taking the hard drive, putting the special firmware on there, undetectable, shipping it on. And from then on, anything done on the computer that used that hard drive was completely open and available to the governmental agency that did this, presumably the NSA. See, that's the problem, is it is completely possible. And maybe, who knows, maybe Lenovo does do this. It's possible to put stuff in firmware, the invisible software that runs your computer, that you can't see, detect, or know about. The only thing you could do is monitor the traffic from your computer to the outside world looking for leaks. I think that's how the person who found this infection in September discovered it. He noticed certain odd communications to the outside world. It just underlines our dependence. Technology is a dependent. Life is dependent because we're so high technology. Life is dependent on others. And there's a certain social contract, especially in technology, that you will not do these kinds of things. And once you break that social contract, I have to think there has to be a penalty. It's just beyond the pale. 8888-ASK Leo, that's the phone number. Heather Humman is here. She's the phone ranger. Takes the calls. Hi, Heather.
Hey.
How are you?
Well, you're depressing me.
It's not depressing. it should anger, I think, us. But it does raise the issue: is it possible to say, with complete authority, that I am using this technology privately? I don't think so.
It just makes me think of a bad boyfriend who does something to you that can't be undid.
Yeah,
you know, they can't walk
on out.
Back.
Walk on out. Walk on out.
Done with you.
So tonight's the Academy Awards. I'll be rushing home right after the shows today.
To put on your
put on my tux swimsuit
penguin
suit. Yeah, put on the tux. I like to celebrate the Academy Awards by wearing a tuxedo.
Yeah.
Did you see that they get $125,000 gift bag, all the nominees?
And people turn it down.
Well, because you have to pay taxes on it.
Yeah, and there's some wacky gifts.
There was
like a psychic reading. Hello, don't need it, don't want it. You know, can you pick through the bag and throw out some things?
No, I think not. But see, of course, companies want to do this. Apple traditionally has always put iPhones in these gift bags. It's $160,000 this year. this gift bag, which means for most of these people, since they're in a high tax bracket, you're going to pay $70,000-$80,000 in taxes to take home this bag of stuff you probably don't want. Luxury vacations, car rentals, LED liposuction in these bags. Hair follicle stimulant.
That is not in there.
It's in the bag, worth $1,200. That means actor or actress, you're going to pay $600 for that hair follicle stimulant.
I just saw that in is it Hammock or Schlemmer? Is that how you say that?
Probably Hammock or Schlemmer. That sounds like it.
It's the Sky Mall of...
It's a vibrator for your head.
I know, and it doesn't actually make any claims aside from rejuvenation.
Feels good.
Do you mean it'll grow?
Feels good. Feels good.
And it's the wackiest looking thing.
Years worth of car rentals, I'd take that. A luxury hotel in Italy. The pulse wave vibrator. I don't know what that's for. A psychic reading worth $20,000. See, I'd turn down the gift bag because that means that's going to cost you 10 in taxes.
Psychic reading.
Mediterranean sea salts, custom furniture. There's almost always technology. And I don't. Unfortunately, we don't always know what's in these bags. But and the past, Apple has always put stuff in there. And that's something people want. They might take the lipo just to get the iPhone. CNN has a video of all the stuff inside the bag. Wow. You know,
weird.
Movie stars aren't like you and me.
No.
They lit a different light. Here I am. I'm going to, you know, it'd be cool if they put the iWatch in there, but I don't think they will, the Apple Watch. I don't think
they will. Wouldn't that have been nice?
That doesn't come out till April. You couldn't put an NDA in the gift bag and say, if you would like what's in this box, you must sign this non-disclosure agreement. You may not wear this in public. You may not tell anybody about it. But we want you to be the first to own the best watch we've ever made. So, who should I talk to here? What do you got for me?
Wow, well, I guess we're going to go to pretty much the opposite of Hollywood. Because poor Kelly, have you even heard of this town? Lives way out there in Fuquay. Verena, North Carolina.
Are we? Wow. Thank you, Heather. Are we saying that right, Kelly? Fuquay, Verena?
Fuquay, Verena, because very few people live here.
What is it? What language is that? Is that Portuguese, Spanish?
I'm not exactly sure, but I know that there used to be a town called Fuquay Springs, and then a guy moved in and set up sort of a tourist town. Then another guy down the road named his town Verena after his wife. And then back in the 60s, the two towns merged.
They merged. Yep. Wow. What can I do for you today?
Well, I live out in the country. And when we bought our house, the realtor told us that it was cable ready. And they just had to bring the cable to the neighborhood.
Cable ready.
And the lines were in the street. And that was incorrect. And so we have 0.3 up and 6 down.
Ugh.
We have DSL.
There is
no cable here.
Yeah.
There's no faster options.
I do not move into a house unless I go in the house and plug in my laptop and do a speed test because, well, I need internet. So cable ready in the case of the builder mainly means they put cable junctions in the house.
You got they a little, didn't.
Which is very deceptive because you plug into it, nothing happens. Because turns out the cable is 5,000 feet that way.
Actually, it's a mile.
Yeah, 5,286 feet.
I think Charter recently put a cable junction at the end of our neighborhood, or I guess at the beginning because we're at the end. But that's a mile away, and
one mile.
They said it would take $20,000 per block, and they're not
willing
to upgrade.
And if you and the neighbors are willing to get together to do it,
they still won't upgrade.
They still won't do it. If you paid the trench, they wouldn't do it.
No.
Wow.
Well, I doubt it, but I don't know how much it would cost to trench a mile down to my house.
A lot, let me tell you. Hang on, we got to take a break. We'll come right back after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. La. I got a gift bag that actually be pretty cool to get. I get it every week in my mail. My mail carrier brings me my Blue Apron every week. Do you know about Blue Apron? Blue Apron is for people who love to cook but don't have time to shop, and that's a lot of us. I get home, you know, right before the Oscars tonight. I'm not going to have time to shop and prepare a lovely meal, but Blue Apron makes it easy. All the ingredients. Now, they don't cook it for you. This is great. And I've had, you know, boxes where the food's cooked and frozen, not so good. This is fresh. These are fresh ingredients. And everything you need to make a specific recipe, the recipe card comes in there. They're healthy, high-quality ingredients, perfectly proportioned. You get a lovely recipe card. So, and by the way, once you've cooked this once, you'll now know how to cook it forever. And so it really is a great way to learn. You can even get free recipes from Blue Apron. Sign up for their mailing list. But look at some of these. Italian wedding soup, my favorite thing in the world. With fragola sarda and spinach, miso, yuzu, glazed cod. I mean, this is stuff you would say, boy, that's good in a restaurant, but I don't think I'd have the mix fixings to make this. How about roasted poblano chilaquiles with sunny-side-up egg and avocado? And the thing is, this recipe card tells you everything. You get all the ingredients in the mail, in the box, in a refrigerated box, so it's fresh. I got to tell you, it's amazing. They also use local ingredients, farm fresh, so they're always in season. Each meal is balanced, 500 to 700 calories per serving, and less than $10 a meal. So, yeah, you put a little effort into it. It takes about half an hour to prepare, but you feel good about that, and it frankly tastes a lot better because you cook it. They work around your schedule and dietary preferences, too. So, A, you'll never get the same meal twice in a row. There are always new menus. And B, you'll have the best stuff like a shrimp po' boy with buttered lettuce and apple salad, or rice cakes, mushroom, napa cabbage, tetsoi, which is baby bok choy tip, Chinese chives, stir fry. Oh, man. This would be great for date night. You get it. They have family packs, too, so you can get family quantities. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook it. Check out this week's menu. Get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. Two meals free. I ain't kidding you. blueapron.com/twit. No commitment, personalized menus, deliveries on your schedule, and two free meals. blueapron.com/twit. And we thank them so much for the support of the Tech Guy Show. It's a really cool idea. We have a few of our hosts do this, and just, I do it, but I mean, I don't do it every night. I think Denise Howell does it every night. She loves this. Will there be an Academy Award selfie this year? Like, remember Ellen did that last year? It was an ad. This was the funniest thing. It was an ad for a Samsung, I think a Note 4 or the S5. I can't remember which Samsung phone, but it was very obvious when they were taking it. There was a big old Samsung phone, Bradley Cooper. She had to give it to Bradley Cooper so he could hold his arms out far enough. And probably the most retweeted selfie ever. And what we found out later was that Ellen, in fact, still uses her iPhone because she tweeted about it afterwards with her iPhone. So she didn't give up her iPhone. She just, you know, Samsung, give me some money. I took a selfie. What do you want? Apparently, it was rehearsed. It was planned. It felt very unplanned, like when she ordered the pizza. Now, it's Neil Patrick Harris, right, is hosting this year. Who is he? Is he Doogie Howser? No. Is he? That's Doogie Howser going to host the Oscars? Okay. He's, you know, they're trying to get young people to watch, so they have younger people hosting. Remember when they had Anne Hathaway and James Franco? Not that kind of a weird, very weird. But they're trying to get young people to watch. But the problem is Doogie Howser just looks young. He isn't actually young anymore. Just a little tip to the Oscar folks. They're all 80-year-old men. They know, that Doogie, he's cute. What is he, 14? No, I think he's well on his way to 40. This is a consumer tip, right? Look for the camera phone in tonight's Oscars, because that will be an advertiser. Do you think Apple will have, like, we're not going to let Samsung get away with this. This year, it's going to be an iPhone 6. We'll have to watch and see. Anyway, we were talking before the break with Fuquay Varina, North Carolina, Kelly on the line. And poor Kelly just bought a new house, cable ready. They do that in TVs, too, cable ready. It doesn't actually... You know, it's ready. It doesn't actually have cable. And it turns out the nearest cable is a mile down the road, and her cable company won't install it. So she's got DSL. And DSL which comes through the phone lines, maybe, you know, your only hardwired choice probably is. The thing about DSL is it goes down in speed the farther you are from the central office. It sounds like you're kind of out of town, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. Very much so.
So are you actually getting the promise? You said, what, 6 megabits down and
0.3 up.
0.3 up. Are you actually getting that?
If we use our cell phones.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
Well, we have CenturyLink, and they said we pay for the fastest speed available, and this currently is the fastest speed.
Yeah, and it has to do with the distance you are from their central office.
Right.
The fact that you can get DSL at all is actually impressive. Usually more than 2 miles from the central office, you don't get it at all.
Hmm.
So that's good. You're wondering, I presume, how to get something faster?
Yes. My neighbor has satellite internet. He pays $130 a month for 50 gigabytes. But we have a business, and we have very, very large data requirements. And so 50 gigabytes, we go through that in about 4 days.
Right. 50 gigabytes is the amount he can use a month. And then it's slower speeds. And so satellite has a few issues. Yes, it's expensive. You have to buy equipment. You have to buy a dish. And it's high latency as well, because you're sending your signal up to the satellite and then it comes back down to Earth. So there's delay in that, which means it's bad for video gaming, Skype, anything that needs to be real time. And then in most cases, internet, there are good satellite internet providers now. I like Wild Blue from Exceed is very good. But many of them will have fair use policies, because it's very easy to overwhelm the satellite. So if their customers are bandwidth hogs, that can be a problem. And they'll have low caps, as you can see. 550 gigabytes a month is not very much. Wouldn't be enough for you, it sounds like. The other thing...
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, so better than satellite. You note already that your LTE connection from your phone is faster. You can talk to the phone company about doing it this way as well, wireless through the phone. They will make units that you could put in the house to do that. Problem is, they also will have bandwidth they will have caps on the amount of data you can use. But you can pay more and get more. So if your business needs this, that might be another thing. Who's the carrier out there?
We have Verizon.
Yeah,
and our cell phone signal is weak.
It's weak, but it works.
It's true.
So you could talk to, if your signal is, are you getting 2 bars, 3 bars, or is it not at all? Is it 1 bar? Is it?
Probably 3 bars.
Okay. What they would do is they'd put an antenna outside, which would get you the maximum capability. You know, as you go in the house, it's going to get worse. But they could, you know, and Verizon will do this. They will sell you a home internet access. But I'd price it out. It kind of depends on. The problem is, you can't pay the DSL company for more bandwidth because they're maxed because of your distance from the city.
And they have no intentions of upgrading. Ever.
It's not a question of upgrading. It's how DSL works. You have to be within the farther you are from the central office. They would have to build a phone company central office in your neighborhood for it to improve. That's not going to happen. See, this is it's unfortunate, but this is, I think, the trade-off for living in the country in a beautiful area. That's one of the reasons it's appealing, is that population density is low, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's also the reason that the phone company, the cable company, couldn't care less, because it's too expensive for too few customers. They cannot make the money back.
Well, so, I talked with Time Warner, and they said that they would gladly service our neighborhood because we have 110 homes in our development.
Oh.
And but they said they are not allowed to, because it's a
local franchise
territory.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so,
it's highly regulated.
Yeah, it is highly regulated. It is a monopoly. It's exactly right. And that, by thank the federal government for this, although they did it, the FCC did it under great pressure from the cable companies. The cable company's position was, it's so expensive for us to cable up a neighborhood. We want exclusive access. So they're franchised by your local government, by the Fuquay-Varina City Council. And there's a contract. And I wouldn't believe, by the way, I wouldn't count on Time Warner. Because what really Time Warner is trying to get you and everybody in that neighborhood to do is lobby the city council to change the contract when it's up. Doesn't – now, believe me, these guys are completely capable of saying to you, oh, we'll get you service as soon as we are – but we can't. Oh, we can't, because the city council has franchised another – franchise charter. But if you were to change that contract when it's up, we'd be glad. And then they get there and they go, yeah, no.
Now, we're in an unincorporated area. How does that work?
It's regional. It's regional. Okay. So the county has made a deal. It's whoever your local, you have some local government.
Yes, and then a county.
You can't do anything you want out there. So whoever's in charge has done a deal with Charter, and you can inquire with the county and find out when that deal will run. But I wouldn't count on Time Warner on keeping any promises. I've seen this too many times. The local city council here in Petaluma made a deal with Charter 10 years ago, and Charter promised, "We're going to wire up all the schools. We're going to make it so good. You guys are going to love it." They did none of it. But by the time they're in and they're incumbent, if you're an elected member of the city council and you say, well, we've decided that we're going to get rid of Comcast, you're going to get unelected real quick because people want their cable TV and they don't care about the details. And Comcast knows that, Charter knows that, Time Warner knows that. It's ugly. It's very clear we need competition. The problem is because you're in a lesser populated area, there's less incentive from a purely business point of view to serve you. And that's why I think one of the things we've really wanted, and the FCC has agreed and the federal government has agreed, is that there needs to be a mandate to provide high-speed internet access. And by that, they mean 25 megabits down, by the way, to every citizen in the United States, because that's how we work these days. And it's going to take federal investment, frankly, because companies won't do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. My heart goes out to people who don't have good internet access. And as you know, it's a prerequisite. I cannot go anywhere that doesn't have high speed. And I mean, for me, high speed is 50 megabits per second down, 5 to 10 up. I got to have that. I got a fever, and it can only be cured by more internet. But if you're in a rural area, it can be tough. And there is precedent for this. I've mentioned this before. During the Great Depression, you remember, electricity was kind of like the internet is today. It was something people really enjoyed, having electricity. Yeah. In the cities, the cities were electrified, but the electric companies did not want to run wire all the way out to a burg of 15 people in the Appalachians. It wasn't worth it. So the government, as part of the New Deal, created the rural electrification projects and Tennessee Valley Project. Many federal efforts to bring electricity to every part of the country, and that's what it's going to take, I think, because unless we get these internet, there's some interesting solutions, wireless internet solutions, that are being floated, literally floated, by Google, Facebook, and others. Google wants to do balloons. They call it Project Loon, appropriately, that are stratospheric balloons. They're higher than weather balloons. They're higher than air traffic. They're way, way up there where they're catching winds that can move them all over the world. It's almost like a satellite. Not quite in space, though. They're still in the atmosphere. And they would be, they're not tethered. They just float. But you can control where they go by moving them up and down a little bit because of the prevailing winds in various layers of the atmosphere. And they would provide internet access globally, like to everywhere. Because, of course, it's not just the U.S., rural areas of the U.S., but imagine underdeveloped parts of India or Africa. And the value of getting internet, even if it's not the fastest, but any internet out there would be incredible. Facebook wants to do it with drones, continually flying aircraft. There are lots of plans. And then, of course, Elon Musk, the man who created Tesla, has plans to spend billions to put satellites, hundreds of them, up in the air doing the same thing. So I suspect that and these all can make sense because they reach everywhere, not just urban areas where the population is dense, but also rural areas. It's just all part of the thing. And these are projects I suspect that in the next decade, it'll be easier and easier to get internet, even in the most rural areas, somehow. Hope so. Paul is in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I killed my new iMac.
Did you do it on purpose? Did you do it with a blunt instrument, or was it an accident?
Well, I was kind of bored, and I thought I'd call in and listen to the show, and especially with banter with you and Heather. I mean, the audience has no idea how funny you guys are. It's just
in like, between. Yeah, we get silly. Yeah.
It is awesome.
All the stuff I can't talk about on the radio, I talk about with Heather during the commercial breaks.
All right, so here's what happened. This morning, I decided to buy my granddaughter a computer, and I wasn't going to tell her mom, my daughter, because, hey, that's the fun of being a grandfather. You can do stuff to your kids. It's kind of like payback.
I look forward to those days.
So I found what I thought was a nice mid 2011 iMac, the 21.5-inch screen.
Nice. A used one.
Yeah, it's an i5, so, you know, it'll zip along for the purposes intended. The seller had gone to Apple yesterday, and they wiped everything off for her, and it was at the brand-new Choose Your Language screen. And I'm in...
Grandpa, did you choose Chinese?
I did.
If you're going to do that, it's always good to choose a non-Roman alphabet. That makes it really baffling.
Really challenging, isn't it? So I started, when I started with Mac, I did with the original Skinny Mac. And so I've had tons of Macs in between the Skinny Mac in January of 84 until now. And so I'm used to this setup.
You thought you would be easily able to go into the control panel, the system preferences, and change it back, didn't you?
No, there was no problem with the language. I'm just saying that's where I started from that language.
Oh, it got worse?
Oh, my gosh. So what happened was I get to the migration screen.
Yeah.
And
it's in Chinese.
I want to hook up the external drive, and I want to move some stuff over for her from that.
Yeah.
Nothing. Doesn't see it. Doesn't recognize it.
Okay.
Move past
is it? How are you doing? How are you connecting the two? Via a cable or?
Yeah. USB.
Mm-hmm. USB cable.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so I figured I'd just get to finish the setup and then go back to it later. So I finished the setup. And there's a beautiful picture of Half Dome on the screen. So
nice.
It's somebody in 10.2.
Good.
And all the colors are really nice on the dock.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's nothing else. There's no icon on the right that says Macintosh HD. And I'm thinking, what happened here?
Yeah.
Is this something, you know, somebody that's changed? So I decided to now plug in the external drive. It sees the icon from the external drive. In opening it, the contents from the external drive aren't there, but it's the contents from the iMac that are there. What? What did I do? I killed it.
It's okay. You're going to be all right. Oh. So every Macintosh shipped in the last 8 or 9 years has a really great recovery solution. In fact, you can recover a Macintosh without any system disks, with a completely empty hard drive, literally from the net. So what you can do is you can reboot the Mac holding down Command R to go into recovery mode, and it will give you some options. You can reinstall the operating system. One of the things Apple does that's great is they store the operating system on the net. You can actually one of the options is, all right, well, give us internet access either through Ethernet or via Wi-Fi, and we'll download and install the appropriate operating system. Now, given that it's a 2011 Mac, it won't be Yosemite. It'll be the operating system that shipped with the Macintosh. They check and they say, oh, well, it's this era. So whatever that was in 2011, probably Snow Leopard.
Yeah.
So you'll get that, and then you can go through the process of upgrading. It's free upgrades every step.
As long as I get to that level and get the icon up there, everything else is
fine. You know where to go after that.
Sure. Yeah, sure. That's fine.
So this is one thing they've done so well. If you do need to do internet recovery... from Snow Leopard on up, let's see. Well, wait a minute now. Okay. Some Macs that came with Snow Leopard can use internet recovery, but you have to install OS X Lion or later. Just do the Command R on reboot and see what options are given you. If you do need to do a network recovery, Apple has a page. You have another computer you can look at?
Yeah.
Apple support page, HT4718 OS X recovery will give you all of the options that you can use to recover that. It's not a big deal. It's something I've done many times. It's a simple thing. And kudos to Apple for making this so easy. Windows, Microsoft's finally, with Windows 8, started to offer this kind of recovery. It's something every computer should have, because these things happen.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And I'm not, first time user.
It sounds to me like the hard drive got corrupted in some files. Like, you don't have a complete operating system.
That's
what it sounds like to me.
Well, I'll go play with that and have fun. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're just awesome.
Yeah, my pleasure, Grandpa. Hey, it's a nice gift. That's a really nice gift, I think. Rusty, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rusty.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Hey, we want to cut the cable, but we don't know exactly what to do.
Well, you're going to say goodbye to some stuff.
Okay.
Obviously. Are you in an area in San Diego, where I'm sure you are, where you can get over-the-air television?
Like, yes.
All right. So you're in anybody who can get over-the-air TV should cut the cable. Because there's no reason to pay for cable. So first thing you're going to do is get an antenna that can get your local signals.
Okay.
That way you can watch the Oscars tonight. You can watch a Super Bowl next year. You'll be able to watch stuff that's only available on live TV. And by the way, that's less and less every year. In fact, you can watch the Super Bowl on the internet this year. So more and more of the kinds of content people watch on live local TV can be watched on the internet. But not everything. So the first thing to do is make sure you got your live locals working. And that's nice because it's free. And by the way, if you have an HD TV, that's the best quality HD you're going to get from any of these solutions. It's less compressed than anything that comes in over the internet. Then you're going to need an internet connection for your TV. And for that, I'm going to have to take a break because we have news at the top of the hour. But when we come back, I'll give you some of the things a cord cutter should have. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The sponsor for this hour of the Tech Guy Show is the fabulous Ring Central. This is our phone system here in the Brick House Studios. I'll be honest, I'm a cheapskate. Didn't want a phone system, did not want to contract with a local phone company for a PBX in the basement and all that. Fortunately, if you're a tech guy, you get tech solutions, and this is great. This is cloud-based. People can still use their cell phones, but they use the RingCentral app to place calls. So we're paying for the call. It's coming from our business 800 number. They can text from our 800 number, receive texts. They can fax. It is so sweet. And, of course, you can have phones, too. They look like regular Polycom desk phones. We have Polycom phones throughout. The conference room has a Polycom conference set, but it's all RingCentral connected. Here's something that the phone company will not do. All your calls are encrypted and private with SecureVoice. RingCentral lets you keep your existing numbers. You can use toll-free numbers. We have 800 numbers. You can create local extensions. Even vanity numbers, one-off all the time. And, boy, look at all the things you get with RingCentral. HD video conferencing, so you can have meetings. This is part of your RingCentral plan. There's no setup fee or activation fee. Customer support is free 24/7. And this is awesome. RingCentral just announced RingCentral for Google. They now work with Google Apps, which we're a Google for Work company. We use Google for Work. And RingCentral will increase productivity by doing everything you want to do without leaving your Google app. The dial pad on your screen will make cards from your Gmail account. You can click any number on the screen in Gmail, contacts, or calendar to place a call. It's on your desktop. It's like a smartphone. You listen to your voicemails directly within Gmail, plus many other features, faxing from Google Drive, viewing text messages, scheduling conference calls, and more. I am thrilled with RingCentral. You will be, too. And it starts at as little as $25 per month per user. Everybody in the business has a RingCentral phone on their desk, and that's how we like it. That's how they like it. You can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial and a special offer if you're a Twit listener. For every desk phone you buy, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. That's nice. RingCentral.com, call 800. They have a special vanity number, 800-543-9980, if you want to call that and use the offer code Twit, or just visit them online. 30 days free. RingCentral.com. Really great if you're setting up a business or you have a small business and you're not happy with your provider. You've got to try this. 800-543-9980. Ring Central. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Hey, I always forget to mention, but I should, the website, techguylabs.com. If you hear something on the show, you're driving, you don't want to write it down, don't worry. Just remember techguylabs.com. If you go there, everything that we talk about is linked there. We're actually writing everything down as we talk. Techguylabs.com. Highly recommended. We were talking before the break about cord cutting. Rusty's in San Diego, and he's tired of paying his cable bill. Now, of course, in order to do this, you have to have high-speed internet access. And the cable companies are not stupid. They know this is coming, right? So they've slowly jacked up the cost of high-speed internet access to the point where I suspect cord cutting will not be cheaper than having a cable subscription. It's by the time you add the a la carte, you know, Netflix, Hulu Plus, buying movies on Apple's iTunes or Google Play Store or wherever you buy Vudu, wherever you buy your movies. By the time you add it all up every month, it's going to cost the same, which is a little frustrating. But at least you're not paying for stuff you're not using, which happens all the time with the cable companies. What, Rusty, let me ask you, what is it that you don't want to lose?
The local TV.
So antenna's a great way to go.
The antenna, yeah. Yep. We just don't watch all of what we got or even...
No one does.
Yeah.
And the way they bundle it, the cable companies bundle it so that, for instance, I wanted Turner Classic Movies. I just wanted old movies. And in some cable systems in this country, you can just buy it. It's part of basic cable, but not on Comcast. On Comcast, they figured it out. Oh, people really like this. They're so much so they're willing to pay a lot for it. I had to go up to the highest tier. I had to buy every channel to get one channel. They're so, so sleazy. I hate them so much. And that's part of the satisfaction of cord cutting is just saying, bye-bye, cable company. You messed with me once too often. So locals, now there's a couple of websites that'll help you get the right antenna. You'll enter in your zip code, and based on where you are and where the locals are, they'll tell you what kind of antenna to get. It's called Antenna Web. So Google Antenna Web and information there. There's another one that is even better than Antenna Web. Antenna Web is run by the Consumer Electronics Association. And so I don't know what that means. It's a nonprofit, you know, part of it. But if you want something that's completely independent, there are other choices. The one that I usually mention, every time I mention it, gets taken down because it's just some guy. So I'm going to mention it, but don't go. Please, folks, don't go there. I'm going to mention it, but don't go there till the middle of the night. TVFool.com. Is a great place to go. It's like AntennaWeb. So there's AntennaWeb.org and TVFool.com. Again, we'll put the links to this on the website, TechGuyLabs.com, so you don't need to go right now. And if you go there and it's not loading, well, that's because nobody listened to me. So this will help you find what stations you can get. This is a really great site where you are. You know, because you're in Metro San Diego, you know you can get everything.
Yes.
And then it'll tell you what kind of antenna to get. You do need, it's digital, so you need to have a TV that can handle digital signals. Most modern, all modern ones can. And so forth and so on. So that'll help you with the locals. And now then, you get some TVs you just connect to the internet. I generally don't like the smart TV apps. I feel like they're not very good, so I would recommend getting a Roku, R-O-K-U. It's under $100 from RokuLabs.com. And that connects to the internet, then connects to TV via HDMI and gives you Netflix, but a lot of it. They have thousands of things on there.
Okay.
So Roku's a really good choice. If you buy a lot of stuff from Apple on the iTunes store, then you're going to have to get an Apple TV. That's the only thing that'll play the Apple stuff back.
And, Leo, on the ISP, what am I looking for in terms of speed?
So if you want high def, 1080p from Netflix... In fact, Netflix is really a great resource in this because they publish a page that says, here's what you need in terms of bandwidth to see various qualities. So their speed recommendations from Netflix, if you want high def, is, and I take this with a grain of salt, is 5 megabits down. That doesn't sound like much. But if you're buying an internet connection that's 5 megabits exactly, you won't get 5 megabits. So you need to get more than that. I would say if you had an internet connection that had 10 megabits, you'd be good. Because remember, other people are, other services are using the internet. Other people, maybe in the house, are. You don't want to tap out. So get 10. 10 down would be enough to watch Netflix in 1080p. Netflix also offers 4K streaming. You know, House of Cards is coming back, I think, on Friday. That's going to be 4K. If you had a 4K TV and you had 25 megabits per second download, which means you had a Fios connection, perhaps, a 50 megabit connection, then you could watch 4K as well on Netflix. I don't think that's kind of ridiculous. Get 10 megabits
down. We wouldn't do that.
No.
Are any of the majors okay? You know, like, we've got AT&T, we've got Time Warner.
It's going to be very hard to get 10 megabits reliably from a, unless you're right next to the central office, from DSL of any kind. DSL tends to be more consistent, but slower, like on the order of 6 or 7 megabits.
Yeah, we've had DSL Extreme for years, but over the last year, it's gotten very much slower.
They have a fusion product which fuses two lines that will give you much better speed. So you could ask about upgrading to that.
Okay.
And that also gives you phone service. So it probably will save you money because you'll eliminate your phone company bill and you'll get better internet as well. I've used Fusion for years and it's a good service. I think it's an ADSL2. So it's a newer service. So they give
and
is you,
it quick enough? Fast?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
But generally speaking, cable connect, but see, now you're giving money to the cable company, which we didn't want to do, but that's generally speaking the better speed. They can go much higher and typically than DSL.
Okay.
It's very dependent on implementation in your neighborhood and all that stuff, but in general, cable's going to be faster than DSL, or okay, at least have a faster connection. But look at if you're already a DSL Extreme customer, call them up and say, what would Fusion cost? What kind of bandwidth could I expect? It's very much based on where you are in relation to the phone company's central office. That's the limiting factor on DSL. The farther you are from the office, the more the signal gets attenuated, the lower your speed.
Okay.
Okay? Hey, all good right. luck. I think if more people did this, I don't know what. My arch enemy Comcast would suffer, and that's all I need.
Great advice over the years, Neil.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I sound like a vengeful, evil person on this show. Don't buy Lenovo. I hate Comcast. I'm not. I'm a nice guy. I like people. I like companies, and I want until they mess with me, and then I get upset. And I'm lucky because I kind of have a bully pulpit here. So maybe, you know, I'm a Comcast customer. I confess, at home we have Comcast Business because it's the fastest connection we can get. But I hate calling them. I hate dealing with them. I don't want to talk to them. I hate them. Don't you? Who doesn't hate Comcast? You got to wonder how Brian Roberts, the CEO of Comcast, sleeps at night, knowing that he is the most hated man in America. Brian, and I know he wants to make this better, but Brian, you got to actually do it. You can't just say I want to make it better. You actually have to do it. We'll see. I'm open. I'm open to the idea. They're fast. Their technology is good, but you just don't want to have a deal with them. You saw what they did with people. You can't blame corporate for this. It's some rep, but when people have complained to Comcast and the rep doesn't like them, they change your name on the billing. You've seen this happen a few times now, where they call you a worse name than Jerky Jerk. So all of a sudden your bill starts coming to Jerky Jerk Laporte. But it's a worse name. It's a worse name than that. Just, you know, use your imagination. This has happened at least twice to my knowledge. Nasty names. Oh. Burke in the chat room says, never feel bad about hating Comcast. Feel good about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. 8888-ASK. Leo, Wayne is in Irvine, California. Hi, Wayne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. You're talking about lunch, that food truck across the street by Farmer's Market. Pulled pork sandwiches.
Oh, baby. That's a very good one. Have you been there, the Petaluma Market?
Yeah.
They have a very nice pulled pork. You know, I went on Yelp because I want to know what the best Mexican food in Petaluma was. It's the food truck at Washington and Peyran is the best Mexican. It's the food truck. And the funny thing is the food truck parks across the street from Taco Bell. I feel like they're saying there is an alternative. Anyway, what can I? You're in Irvine. How do you know so much about Petaluma?
I dropped by your place one time.
Oh,
one
that's
of your
nice.
Guys told me looking place to eat my. And your guy said, "Go across the street, Farmers Market. The food."
It was fabulous. It's fabulous. Yeah. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm going to talk about one of your favorite things. Talk about travel. And I know you were down in Antarctica a couple years ago. And
I tried to get to Antarctica.
Oh, you didn't?
We didn't. In fact, somewhere I have a picture of me and Woz and about 20 other people being told, oh, the weather's too terrible. We can't go. And then I asked the cruise line, oh, have you ever got, you know, because cruise line sells this as an excursion. We were in Ushuaia, which is the southernmost city in South America. And you can fly from Ushuaia to Antarctica. And we bought the excursion to do that. And they make a big show of taking you to the airport, and then the pilot comes out and with some pieces of paper, probably from 3 weeks ago, says, "Oh, see this? Can't fly out there." So I asked the cruise line, "Have you ever?" They have never ever made it. It's always bad weather. So that seems to me a con, but okay. Anyway, Woz and I were on this cruise, but we had a wonderful time. We went somewhere else.
You have to do it on a small expedition ship.
That's what I think we need to do. Yeah,
my wife and I are expedition leaders for these small.
I want to do that. Which one do you do it for?
We're doing it. We do work for a couple different companies. This year, we're working in the Arctic for G Adventures.
That's the way to do it. These are like boats built for the Arctic Sea.
Yeah, we're going to take people out to look for polar bears.
I'm in. Send me some information.
Okay, I'll do that. Really, the reason I'm calling is because since we're out at sea out in that area for 3 months, in the Antarctic, there's really no cellular service. But in the Arctic, where you look for these polar bears, the most northerly point is an area called Svalbard, which is an archipelago.
Yeah.
And they have a Norway cellular service there.
Yeah. People live up there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. That's where reindeer come from.
Exactly. We'll see reindeer and walruses and polar bears.
I met a couple that live up there. I said, how do you do it? It's dark like half the year. There's no sun.
But it's sunny for half the year.
But the other half, it's no dark. Anyway, you want to get cellular service from Norway Cellular.
But the thing is, we get on the ship in Scotland and we go up the coast of Norway into the Arctic Circle. So I was thinking about, ever heard of a company called No Roaming?
No.
Oh, it's KNOW Roaming, and they have a little SIM card. It's a micro SIM card that actually is a sticker that goes on your SIM card, and it recognizes where you are. So you can automatically connect.
Wait a minute. You use your existing SIM card?
Yeah.
And you put something on it?
Yes. It's unbelievable.
It's a sticker?
Uh-huh.
And it somehow magically changes your SIM card so you can use some other country's system without paying roaming charges?
Yeah.
Have you used this before?
No, that's why I'm calling you.
On the face of it, doesn't sound possible.
The website is knowroaming.com.
Well, any idiot can make a great-looking website. I don't know if that is by itself. Reduce roaming fees with no roaming. Huh. Well, I don't know how it would work. A sticker on your SIM card shouldn't change anything.
But it has... It's a little tiny SIM card that's on the sticker.
Ah. So it's new electronics. A SIM card, a SIM card really is a little bit of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at your SIM card, if you take it out of your phone, you'll see it looks like a little gold circuit board. And that's just really storage. And in there is stored an encrypted data like your special ID so that the phone company knows who you are. And... you know, you can store a few phone numbers and things like that in there. So it is conceivable that I don't know why they do a sticker instead of just giving you a different SIM card, which seems like that would be a better idea. But
well, because they do it because you still use your regular SIM card. When you come back in your local area, it automatically switches back to your local network. Nothing you have to change.
Wow. Interesting. I guess I could see how it would work. Let me ask somebody in the chat room. Has anybody used this service? You're right. It looks like it's a very legitimate looking website.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, anybody could do this. But I would look for reviews. I would look for somebody who's tried this. It seems on the face of it like it is possible. There could be they could modify. I'm looking at what they call a sticker, and it has some contact points that might modify something. Here's a review somebody has found in our chat room from June of last year in Forbes magazine. Now, Forbes is, I have to warn everybody, a little tricky because Forbes does both editorial content and what looks like editorial content, but it's by contributors. Yeah, this is by a contributor who often are paid for by the company that they're, quote, reviewing. So you always have to be a little bit careful. This guy says he tried it in the UK and France, and it worked. It's not a sticker, really. What it is a little shim that they're placing on top of the card, the SIM card, that replaces, it actually changes the electronics of it. I'm not familiar with this. I'd hate for you to do it and get to the Arctic and not be able to use your phone.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to do, since my wife and I have two iPhones, I'm going to put the SIM card or this little no roaming sticker on one phone and get a separate SIM card for the other phone.
Yeah.
A Norway SIM card.
Yeah. The problem is a lot of companies will not send you SIM cards. You have to get it in country.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We'll
yeah.
When we're there.
Unfortunately, we're yeah. And that's why this no roaming probably does all right. Mm-hmm. Because they solve a problem that exists. How much does it cost?
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Oh, yeah, that's something to be considered.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat room says $8 a day. That's actually not bad if you can use unlimited data for $8 a day. That's mm-hmm. not horrible. I don't know anything about it. Let's see if we can find out from somebody who's used it. That's what I'd really want. And I will point you to this Forbes review. We'll put it on our website, techguylabs.com, so you can read it yourself. Have fun in the Arctic. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, every photographer I know uses Epson photo printers if they're going to do their own printing. Do you, Chris Marquardt, what do you print with? You don't have to say Epson.
It's an Epson, though.
Yeah. In fact, Epson was the first.
They pretty much own the market.
They pretty much own it. They were the first to figure out how to do good black and white printing, which is apparently very difficult for an inkjet printer. But they've got it, and man, I love a beautiful, smooth tone black and white image. Man, it looks good.
Black and white prints right back there.
Look at that. Chris Marquardt is our expert on digital photography. He does a lot of black white, does all kinds. He's one of the things I love about Chris, very willing to try and experiment, does some amazing work. He also leads workshops. You can find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. You've got one in Cuba coming up. Is it Cuba?
No, not Cuba. There's one in
New York.
India coming up. There's one in Ireland coming up. And then in October, I'll be in New York City.
That's the one I'm thinking of. I really want to do that.
I'll be teaming up with Princeton Photo Workshop to do a workshop there.
Yeah. So we have him join us every week and not to get hoity-toity, all fancy on us, but to talk about doing great photography with the stuff you've got.
Well, and this time I want to bring something up. You told me last time that you bought a new prime lens.
I bought
a new lens for a camera.
There's a certain kind of photographer. I'm in this group that really is terrible. But
no, you're not.
But I have a fetish for photography gear, and I keep thinking if I just got the right camera or the right lens, all my pictures would look great. And
well,
I'm going to keep believing
that's exactly
that.
What it works like, right?
No, not at all.
No, but I love
the equipment. If you're a gear hound, there's something about photography that really gives you an opportunity to buy lovingly beautiful gear.
And I think there is actually some creativity in that, because every time I get a new piece of gear, it kind of boosts me. It kind
yes.
of helps me.
Yes.
And it might not last that long, but at least for a short time, I get this. Oh wow! Now I'm motivated again. It's a kind of motivation thing.
Well,
so
we talked about this the Voigtländer, or as you Germans call it, the Voigtländer, whatever it's called,
Voigtländer
lens, which is a fairly low cost version of some of the higher end Leica style lenses. But this is a 35 millimeter, not a zoom.
It's a prime lens. That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because most people might be familiar with a zoom lens where you just hit the little plus button and
right.
everything gets closer, or you hit the little minus button and everything goes further away. So you pretty much change what's called the focal length, and the smaller numbers are wide angle, the longer numbers are telephoto.
And all point-and-shoots have zooms in them. I mean, that's normal.
All of them do, yes.
Yeah.
What you have is a prime lens, and a prime lens is one that has a fixed focal length.
You know how you zoom with this camera? You walk closer, or you
sneaker zoom,
or you walk backwards. You have to. You know what? I haven't taken this lens off the camera since I got it. It's a great discipline to kind of think about what you're doing instead of just zooming.
It is. Now, there are several reasons to use zoom lenses. I mean, the first reason, obviously, is convenience, right? You just stand there. You don't have to move. On travel, it's really good to have a zoom lens because you won't have to change lenses. You don't have to carry that many lenses with you. If you are in an environment that is, let's say, on the beach or in a desert or somewhere where it's dusty, having a zoom lens might help you not to have change a lens.
You told me when I was going to go to Antarctica, just bring your 24-105, the kit lens.
Oh, that's a perfect travel
lens. Because it has everything, right? And it's all you need, and you don't ever have to take it off, right?
And then, of course, also with the zoom lens, you get to decide when you shoot what focal length you want to use.
Right.
So you don't have to decide before. That can also be a disadvantage because not making a decision until the last point can influence the picture in some way. And then, of course, another reason for a zoom lens is they're bigger. You know, they're a bit more impressive. So if you want to calculate in that gear factor, then a zoom lens might be the right one for you. But there are also reasons for prime lenses. The first one, and you will be able to confirm that, the Voigtlander that you have has a really smooth, it's really a nice thing for a tech type of person to focus with that lens. Very smooth action, very good build quality.
It was an expensive, it's $1,000 lens. It's not a cheap lens. Although, as you'll quickly learn, $1,000 is the starting point for many lenses. I mean,
let's talk about how bright the lens is. Let's talk about what the maximum aperture for this one is.
This is an
How big does it go?
It's 1.2, so that's very, very wide. Which means you can take low light pictures, you know, with practically a candle.
Yeah. So in general, if you start with a prime lens at, let's say, f/2.8 or something, you will not have to pay these high prices.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are still plenty bright compared to zoom
lenses.
So you get a lot more light in with a prime lens at the same price point. And then usually you also end up with a bit better image quality. I mean, zoom lenses nowadays are amazing, but the image quality for prime lenses is typically at the same price point is typically better.
Yeah.
And then having to decide up front, the sneaker zoom, the lens kind of forcing you into actually walking a bit closer or going a bit further away, that is actually from a photography point of view, from a creative point of view, it's the prime lenses. I call them great teachers. They are wonderful teachers to help you learn more about photography.
Well, this is worse because not only is this a prime lens, so I can't zoom, it's a manual focus lens. So, which, you know, at first I thought, nah, I'm too lazy to do that. But in fact, there's something to be said for having to really think about what you're doing and take a picture. And I really love... It does teach you. So I've been very happy. I took some pictures of my colleague, Megan Maroney. They're great. It's a great portrait lens.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. Beautiful. Isn't it the same with a lot of different things? The moment when you actually have to put a little bit of work in, and in this case, it's the focusing, it's the walking, it's the moving around the subject to find a good angle.
Yeah.
The moment you have to put a bit of work in, that's when you learn. That's when all of a sudden things stick. Things will stay with you. Very unlike the fully automated kind of mode where, it works or it doesn't, but you're not really sure why. This is where you actually learn that, if I do this with a focus, this is what happens. If I do this with my feet, then that's what happens.
I consider this a learning. Yeah, this is trying to take a picture of my dog who's moving like crazy. And the problem with a very fast lens is the in-focus plane is so tiny that if anybody moves, you've lost the focus. But when you get the focus, it really is spectacular. It really does a nice job. It's fun. It's a lot of educators suggest a fixed length lens.
I mean, if you want to dip your toes into the prime lens water, I think the cheapest and still very good suggestion is get a 50 millimeter 1.8. That's kind of the one that I think every photographer should have.
Or even a 2.
Those are around $100. Yeah. They are fairly fairly decently priced, and they will give you an idea of what you might be missing out. And I know a lot of photographers who got like a really cheap 51.8, maybe even used, and then they ended up really, really starting to buy more primes because it's kind of addictive.
It's a terrible addiction. Oh my gosh. Yes. I don't buy zooms anymore. I only buy primes. But the problem is then you have to I need a wide angle and I need a long one and I need a middle one and I need this fast one and I need a slow. And it can kind of get out of control.
It feeds the gear lust for sure.
But that's why I've decided I spent a lot of money on this one lens and I'm just going to use this for a year. Nothing else.
I'm fully with you. That's a very good decision. Yeah. I applaud you for that.
And it takes, there's a learning curve, especially with manual focus. And I'm really learning. And of course, the very fast lens and learning how to frame and move in and out. But I feel like it's a great education. Chris Marquardt's at Discover the Top Floor, a great place to go to learn from Chris directly with his workshops and see his photos, too. He's so much fun. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Our show today brought to you by Prosper. I love this idea. You know, it's really interesting how Silicon Valley has changed so many of the kind of staples that we're used to using in the world. In this case, the loan, the bank loan. When you need money, a small amount of money, relatively small amount of money, but you need it quickly, where do you go? You can, ask a friend. Bad idea. Don't borrow from friends. You can use your credit cards. Yeah, if you want to pay through the nose. You can find a loan shark if you don't mind your kneecaps getting. Or you can go hat in hand to a bank. Not anymore. There's another place better than the big bank loan. It's Prosper. They call it peer-to-peer lending. And the sharing economy, this is another area where it's just really changed how we do business by connecting directly with the people who have the services we need. You can kind of make it simple. Look, that's what Uber did with hailing a cab. That's what Airbnb's done with hotel rooms. And Prosper.com is changing the way we borrow money. So the idea is it's an online marketplace that connects people who need money with people who have money to lend. And now there are something like 2 million people in the Prosper marketplace, lenders and borrowers alike. It has really become this vital, vibrant place. You can borrow up to $35,000, get it in as little as 5 days. I think it's just amazing. Here's what I say. Borrow, if you want to pay off high-rate credit cards, plan a vacation, fix up the house, fix up your business, maybe do some marketing, whatever. $35,000 in 5 days. Check your rate. It will not affect your good credit by going to prosper.com/twit. It's very easy. Friction-free. prosper.com/twit. And to make it even a little bit nicer, we got a little sweet in the pot here. Prosper's offering Twit viewers a $50 Visa gift card when you get the loan. So, just to review, Prosper, peer-to-peer marketplace, lenders, borrowers, up to $35,000 in 5 days, and a $50 Visa gift card at prosper.com/twit. Get your rate today. See how it works for you. prosper.com/twit. Eric, Northridge, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, good afternoon, Eric. I'm Eric.
You're Eric. I'm Leo. Yes. Hi.
Good afternoon, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, before I ask my question, I wanted to make a quick suggestion. Maybe your forum might be a great place for discussion of this, like when you do your intros to the show, or maybe you can direct us where we can find information on this. Is there really any changes being looked at in our government to changing our government data, our what I'm getting as our Social Security numbers, this antiquated system of a number on an actual piece of paper that they mail to you in the mail? Are we looking at any kind of bio data in the future or anything like that? Maybe that's a topic you could discuss one day.
We need to, and the recent Anthem security breach is a really good example. Anthem is a big insurer.
That's what I'm thinking about.
80 million customers' Social Security numbers were leaked. And the problem, among other things, the problem, of course, is that if I have your social date of birth and an address, I can get credit cards like crazy. I mean, that's all you need for identity theft. And the real problem with your social is, first of all, it's not supposed to be used as identification. It even says that on your card because it's very hard to change your social security number. The government does not want you to change it because they want to keep track of your earnings from birth to retirement. And it's much easier if it's just one number. And so you can change it, but the steps required and the reasons allowed are pretty tough. You have to be a victim of identity fraud, for instance.
Well, you're a leader in this field. Help us lobby for that.
Well, so, we definitely need to fix this because everybody's social is out there and it's really a problem. However, go ahead and float the idea of, for instance, biometrics, which is what you did, using your iris or some other body part to identify yourself. And wait and see the furor. I mean, imagine the furor you're going to have politically to get that through. People don't want a national ID card. They don't want the government to have this fingerprint database. And so that's going to be very difficult. I know this is a tough one. I agree. It needs to be solved. But it's a larger problem than just the government. It's the fundamental problem of the internet, which is we call it authentication, proving you are who you say you are. Until 20 years ago, you didn't have a password. Now you have hundreds. This is something brand new because of the internet, this idea of how do you prove you are who you are? Yeah. And it's a mess.
Well, people should know that the government has most of our fingerprints already. All this fingerprint stuff we're doing through live scan and all kinds of other things, the government already has our fingerprints.
Yeah, but that's and you know how big an issue that is.
Yeah.
Right? So, I know people who will not give their fingerprint. You know, at Disneyland, they used to use a fingerprint to get a pass. They used to do this. And I know people who use their knuckles. They won't do it.
Yeah. So, can I ask you a question, actually a request?
Yes.
There is a process that you regularly suggest for us on the show that I'm attempting to complete, but I would like to ask you if you could sort of review it, outline it here for us quickly. I think it's really only about a 5 or 6 step process, and that's basically to save your computer. You're always talking about through an external hard drive, first always saving your data, but secondarily, when you have a problem, imaging your computer.
Yeah.
Imaging, and that's a more difficult process, but I think a novice could handle it. My wife and I have a very nice Sony VAIO laptop, which has, in and of itself, was expensive. It has nice peripheries, but we believe the hard drive is going bad, slowing down in processing speed, and then actually shutting down with these interesting external power errors that we researched online.
This is why backup is so important. Hard drives do fail or get lost, or people, you know, one of the most common problems is you accidentally delete a file. And you go, oops, and you realize, I want that back. So everybody must have a backup solution. But you do, there's a step beyond that, and I have mentioned it before, and you mentioned it, of imaging your disk. When you get a new computer, this is particularly important because nowadays computer manufacturers, Windows manufacturers, PC manufacturers don't give you disks. They don't give you a restore disk. You're expected to make them, which is a pain. But there's a better way, which is to get your system exactly as you wish it to be before you really start using it. Add all the apps you want. Add all the updates so it's completely up to date. And then making a disk image. It's like making your own recovery disk. And there are a lot of tools, both free and paid, to do this. Acronis True Image is a popular paid app. I've used Drive Snapshot.de. That's paid, but very easy and good to use. There are free solutions like Clonezilla, which require you to use a Linux boot disk. Go ahead.
When we bought a WD external 1 terabyte, nice external.
It came with software. Yeah.
It comes with the ability through their website to use Acronis.
Yeah, which you should do.
To my questions about the steps in the process. How do I? A couple of questions. Maybe you could give this step process.
Sure.
Is how do I know when what I have on that peripheral drive once I tried to image it is exactly what is on the computer? How do I know what all the partitions?
That's why you want multiple. That's why you want multiple backup solutions, because if one fails, you at least you have another choice. So then, typically a disk image does one and only one partition. So if you want to, Western Digital, I think, gives you one. There are bit copy programs that will go sector by sector and pay no attention to the formatting and the contents of the disk, but literally copy the whole disk. But most of them are not imaging. They're merely for cloning one disk to another. But that's not a bad solution if you've got a disk that has some, you've done some, taken some effort to partition it in some unique way. And you, if you've put some energy into setting it up and you want to duplicate it, that's a good way to go. Use the hard drive manufacturer. If you buy an external hard drive, the hard drive manufacturer, whoever it is, will offer software for download that will let you clone a hard drive sector for sector. Not a bad idea to buy a disk, clone your boot disk, and put that thing away. Put that clone away in case you need it down the road.
Well, how do you get it now from the peripheral drive that you've imaged it to?
Right.
How do you get it to the one you're going to
install? Well, you'll have to get a new one, put one in or boot to it, and then do the same process of sector-to-sector cloning back, right?
So you install the new one, which is obviously a blank slate. You install that.
Yeah.
And then you
sector to sector. Yeah, you put the backup drive on a USB. You're going to have to run some software, right? So you know, often the case is, in this case it's true, that you will want to make a boot disk, a boot CD, or a boot USB key that contains
right.
the
yeah,
software.
That's the step they said to do as well,
yeah.
which we did.
And then you'll have the software, you can run it from the USB disk, USB key and do the recovery. I think you can go on and on doing this stuff, and it's the key is to have three copies of everything, two different forms of medium, one in the cloud. That's what we always talk about, 3-2-1 backup. If you remember only one thing, remember that. Three copies of everything. And if you delete one now, you only have two. Deleting the original, just because you have something on a drive that says backup doesn't mean you can delete the original. You need three copies at all times. Two different forms of media, so you're not reliant on a CD backup or a USB backup or a hard drive backup or a cloud backup. But one of them should be cloud because that's off-site. That's somewhere distant. Now, imaging is too big, and you probably don't want to put the image in the cloud. You only want to put your data in the cloud. The imaging is more for convenience. Making an image of your existing hard drive is like making a fast install disk. So you don't have to break out the Windows installer, get all your apps, do all the updates. Everything's on that one image. And it is, you know, it's not a black diamond tip, but it's a somewhat more sophisticated user that's going to do this. We used to do it on Tech TV because we were live. Computers crash. Every computer, I spec'd them out before we went on the air, that every computer on the set, on the television show, had two hard drives, the boot drive and a second drive that would contain an image of the boot drive. And we did it because should the computer crash, a hard drive die, in the middle of a show, we could go to a commercial and within 5 minutes restore the original drive from the image. We were able to get right back to work on a live TV show. That's obviously pretty important. And so it's a great technique, but it's for people who have, for whatever reason, the need to get right back to work. It's great for businesses. Cloning is a useful thing to know about, and if you get a new computer, this would be a good time to do it. You don't want to clone all the time. You want to clone when you have got a perfect machine that's clean. You know there's no viruses. You've got everything you want on all the updates. That's the clone you want, not the one 3 years later when the machine's a mess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk high tech at 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And you can also call. I know we have a lot of listeners on the internet. You can call via Skype if you're outside those countries and reach us. The website is techguylabs.com. Use that to get to the chat room, to see the answers to previous questions, to listen and watch previous shows. It's all there. Techguylabs.com. Last week, we were talking about, and I ordered it, this crazy tablet from Winbook. Micro Center was selling it for $59 plus shipping. And I thought, wait a minute, what? Is it Android? No, it's a full Windows 8 tablet. Not even like RT, I mean Windows, and includes a year of Office 365, which by itself, if you paid for it, would be over $70. So it seems on the face of it impossible, but I did order it. I thought, well, this is an inexpensive way, one I can review. And I got it this week, and I've been playing with it, and it's really quite remarkable. Now, I noticed that Micro Center jacked the price up as soon as we started talking about it, so I don't know if it's still $59. I got it from Amazon for $69, which included shipping. I have to say, Windows 8, one of the advantages of Windows 8 now is it's you log into your Microsoft account, and it kind of customizes it from scratch to all this, you know, like my desktop appears, everything that I... all the apps that I reinstall. So it's really an easy way to start a new machine. In fact, when you first install Windows 8.1, it says, I see you already have a Windows 8.1 computer, in my case, my my Dell and my Acer S7, and it said, would you like me to use the setup from one of those? So you choose an existing computer, and it duplicates it. You really see the tablet side of Windows 8 here, and this is one of the reasons many people, myself included, hated Windows 8, is it couldn't decide if it is it a desktop operating system, is it a tablet operating system. But on a little 7-inch tablet like this, you really see the value of this kind of tablet interface. It's very, the touch works very easily. I'm in the chat room in here, and it's a really great second screen. You could watch movies on it. 1280 by 800, so it's high def. There's a couple of negatives. You know, $59, it's got terrible cameras, but who cares, right? It's good enough for Skype. It doesn't have an... this is kind of a negative. And the Dell, which is about $20 more, has a Windows key on the front, which Windows 8 tablets are supposed to have a Windows key, because that's how you get back to the desktop. This one, like some of the other low-cost tablets, has a Windows button that you press. It'll bring you back to the Windows screen. But that's not, I think that's not as elegant. On the other hand, if that's how they had to save money, for $59, who's going to complain? And yeah, you get Microsoft Office. Somebody was asking, when you buy it, do you get Microsoft Office on the tablet, or do you download it and then use a serial number? You get a serial number. So somebody said, you know, you could just buy the $59 tablet and sell the serial number for more, or at least for something like what you paid. And if you didn't need Office, in fact, I could sell the serial number because I already have Office 365 and I wasn't able to use the serial number. So that, yeah, that comes as a separate item. Micro Center apparently has open box versions of this for even less. And somebody in the chat room saying that they sent out coupons that would bring the price down to $40. Now, in the past, I have adamantly said, do not buy a cheap tablet. Those cheap Android tablets you get at the grocery store, don't. But you know what? This is not so bad. And because it has a full-size USB port, which you could run a keyboard off of, this would be not a bad first computer. Or somebody who, you know, who's strapped for cash, who did want to get online, do email, and surf the net. Boy, $59. That's less than dinner for two. And it's low enough that this is the kind of thing you might get for the coffee table while you're watching the Academy Awards, so you can watch the Twitter while you're doing the Oscars. I'm pretty impressed. It's the model is the Winbook, Winbook, TW700. It's a 7-inch tablet, which is pretty small. And as I said, I've found it on Amazon for $70. Micro Center had it for less, $59 plus $6 shipping. On the other hand, as soon as we started talking about it, the prices changed. So I don't know what the current price is. Get it now before they hear it on the radio again. But yeah, you can watch Netflix on it. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Wow. It's an interesting world where you can get a full computer. You know, it's only got a gig of RAM. It's only got 16 gigs of storage, but you can put a micro SD card in it, get it up to 64 gigs. You get cloud storage with it. It's an interesting world we live in. Amazing. And the thing sometimes you forget is that even 10 years ago, computing was pretty unreliable. You'd get a lot of crashes, unpredictable. It's gotten very solid, very stable. And I feel like very useful. We've come a long way, I guess, is the bottom line on that one. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. Yes, somebody asked, can you connect a monitor to it? You sure can. It has a mini HDMI port on it, too. We connected up a monitor. We were watching YouTube videos on it. That's pretty amazing. Kathy in Oxnard, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
So trying to figure out the wonders of my brand new printer. I have a MacBook Pro that's only a couple years old. Uh-huh. And I just replaced my printer yesterday with the Epson Workforce Pro.
Good for you. That's a sponsor of the show, so.
That's where we heard about it, so I went out and got that one.
Okay.
My problem is I have installed all of the software. I uninstalled it, reinstalled it. One of the reasons I wanted this particular model is because the ability to scan to my computer. But when I go to the touchpad on the actual printer, it doesn't see my printer, you know, in the lineup. But I can...
Can you print to it or just not scan?
I can print to it just fine. In fact, I finally opened up one of the, I think it was document capture from my computer. And if I put papers in the feeder, it'll scan through and then dump it back onto my computer.
Oh.
But I can't scan from the...
you can't from the front panel.
Right. Exactly. Hmm. And I use that function a lot for what I do.
Yeah. I use my Workforce as a scanner all the time. It's really nice to have a printer and a scanner. And, of course, most modern printers now, you don't have to connect to the USB port. You could just use it in Wi-Fi. So you could put the printer somewhere out of the way, convenient, and then wherever you are in the house, print to it or use it as a scanner. I really appreciate that feature. You know, I don't know what the answer is because I have not tried to use the front panel. I always use the computer to do it.
Oh, okay.
One thing I take it back. I'm sure there's other ways to do this, but one thing you can do that the Workforce has, I think yours will, I'm not sure if it's model specific, mine does. I have a 4630, I think. You can scan to the cloud. So if you have a Google Drive or Dropbox or a cloud storage account, I use it with my Google Drive and I love this. I don't even have to go to a computer. I go to this Epson, open it up, put something in to scan it, and I say, save it to Google Drive. And it scans it to Google Drive. Then I go to my, whenever I'm at another computer, I go to my Google Drive and there's the scanned document. So that I was able to do from the front panel. I don't know about scanning to a computer. It may be that you have to do that from the computer side because otherwise it doesn't know, well, which computer?
Well, it's really interesting because we have another computer in the house and that shows up. You know, we're all.
Oh, it's just it's just the Apple that doesn't.
Yeah, it's the Apple that doesn't show up. And when I open up the event manager, it just says that function's not available.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. And maybe Epson has an answer for you. I have been able to scan to Google Drive from the front panel, and that's actually quite handy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, moving on to Duke in Redondo Beach, California. Hi, Duke.
Hello there. A couple of things. One, since you were just talking about Epson, I went and bought a 2260, and I was delighted to find out when it does two-sided printing, which I do a lot of, I didn't have to take the papers out.
Isn't that nice? It goes and turns it over.
And it turns it over automatically. That
I love that.
Very nice thing.
We live in amazing times.
Yes, yes.
The printer turns the paper over.
Yeah, I'm my big HP laser color printer. I got to take the papers out, pull the drawer out, put them in, put them back in, and all that business. You know.
To be fair, and again, Epson's a sponsor. Disclaimer. But to be fair, I'm sure HP makes one that turns the paper over too now.
Well, I'm sure they do. They make inkjets.
I'm sure they figured that out by now.
They make inkjets to do, but the
lasers
are
very
expensive.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, getting to my original question,
yes.
I've got a bunch of LP 33 and a third records I want to be able to copy into CDs, DVDs, whatever, and I know I need to copy them to the printer, to the computer first, and then burn them. Burning them would be a piece of cake. My problem is the turntable I've got is maybe 10 years old. It's a good, nice turntable. That's not a problem. Problem is coming out of the back, I'm not sure how to wire it into the computer.
Turntables are what we call unbalanced. And what it means is you're going to get a lot of buzz and hum if you just took the output of the turntable and put it into the sound card of the computer, you need a little preamp with a that has a turntable connection, and it will then take the turntable. You see this on amps too, that you don't plug the turntable into the input. You have a special turntable connection because it's an unbalanced input. It's an unusual kind of connection.
You recommend one?
Oh yeah, any cheap preamp. Too bad I can't say go down to Radio Shack and get one. That's what I used to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have a turntable, you must have an amp that you connect it. Do you listen to records on it?
Yeah. But it connects to a big
No, I understand, but take the amp will have output jacks. You know those little red and white?
Yeah.
That's what you need. Just take it out of that instead of the turntable directly. Play the turntable, put the amp on the turntable setting, play the record, but the instead of taking it directly out of the turntable, you take it out of the amp.
Gotcha.
The stereo, just get the stereo RCA jacks into a, your computer has a sound card. It probably takes a mini jack in, so you're going to have to go to whatever the equivalent of Radio Shack is nowadays and get a RCA, left, right RCA, red and white RCA plug to mini jack. And then plug that in the computer. Get a long one so you just don't have to pull it.
Yeah. Okay, I appreciate that. I really like your show.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. We're going to miss Radio Shack. Man, I feel so bad, man. I feel so bad. So you probably heard by now, Radio Shack, 4,000 stores. That's one of the advantages of Radio Shack is every little town had a Radio Shack. And in the day, you would go to Radio Shack, not just because of the battery club, but you could literally get resistors, transistors, capacitors, cables, plugs, all sorts of stuff. And frankly, it seems to me, as a geek, to be a vital resource in every community. Where else are you going to go? There's nowhere else. They were the ones. I think they turned their back a little bit and made a mistake. They turned their back on that crowd. And they started becoming kind of a cell phone, remote controlled dump truck store. And oh gosh and golly, can't make it, can you? So they've literally gone bankrupt. Half the stores will be sold to Sprint. Amazon has talked about buying some of the stores for showrooms. I don't know if that'll happen. But this is a huge loss to every community in this country. And I feel like if Radio Shack, gosh, I wish I could have gotten a hold of them about, 5-10 years ago, and said, focus on the geeks. Focus on the maker movement. See, the maker movement now has created in every community probably a decent number of people who want to build and make and do. They want 3D printers. They want to build and, fly drones. They want to, and then there's got to be enough business. Maybe, I guess you make a nickel on a cable for a amplifier to a computer, but seems to me there should be some business there that keep the thing alive. It's kind of sad. Now, maybe somebody will pick up the slack here. I don't know. Maybe Walmart or Target or somebody will have a little electronics section. Please do. We need this. Because mail order is fine, but when you need a cable to connect your amplifier to your PC, you need it today. You don't want to go online and buy it and get it in 2 days, 3 days. 8888 Ask Leo. Ted, I'm sounding like an old guy now. In Woodland Hills, hi, Ted. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
I have kind of a catch-22 problem. All of a sudden, my internet browser crashes whenever I try to open it.
That's annoying.
It really is. So without trying to delete it...
How do you get another one? Because you need a browser to download a browser, don't you?
Exactly.
So tell me a little, are you on Windows?
I am.
And the browser 7. Is Internet Explorer?
Exactly, yes.
So you want to start Internet Explorer in safe mode. The problem almost certainly is that there is something in your history or your cache that is crashing Internet Explorer. And, of course, you can't start it enough to get Chrome or Firefox, you can't get it to run. So if it crashes, it is possible to reset Internet Explorer's settings to clear the cache without running it. And you go into your control panel and you open the Internet settings. And you should be in Internet Options, I guess it's called, and you should be able to reset. There'll be a command to reset the settings, clear the cache. It's under the Advanced tab, and there's just a reset button. Try that first.
I did see that. Will I lose my saved information as far as...
You'll lose bookmarks. You'll lose cookies. If you do a full reset, you'll lose all the cached stuff. The cache is the problem, almost certainly.
Okay.
So the way the Internet Explorer and all browsers work is to save time. When you download an image from a website, it stores it locally in a cache. Mm-hmm. If that were to get corrupted, and that's easy enough, you know, a little mess up in the hard drive, which happens all the time, and suddenly loading that picture just goes boom, kills it. Or you have a toolbar that's corrupt, resetting it will reset all of those. But you raise an interesting question. The catch-22 is, if I don't have a browser, how can I get a browser? And there, in fact, some people say, and somebody's saying in the chat room, Internet Explorer is merely a delivery system for Google Chrome. I'll tell you the solution when we return. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we were talking, it is a catch-22. If your internet browser, if you have Windows and you have one browser, Internet Explorer, and it won't run, what do you do? What will you do? Well, we gave you one way. You can go to the Internet Options Control Panel and reset it. And if that doesn't fix it, I'm told, although I don't know if this is the case, I'm told that you can uninstall it. If you go to Add Remove Programs, or now they call it Programs and Features, you can find IE. I was just looking on my Winbook and I couldn't, but supposedly you can find IE and you can uninstall it and reinstall it through Windows Update. That would also help. But then the kind of a weird one is you can also FTP a copy of Mozilla, Firefox from Mozilla. You'd have to open your command. Let's see. Well, how would you do this? You'd open a command line. So, you know, your DOS-like shell. And you'd see the C:\ prompt. And you type FTP space. Which is file transfer protocol, FTP space, ftp.mozilla.org. Is that all you need to do? I'll have to try it. It is a catch-22. If you can't launch Explorer, how do you fix Explorer? That's Internet Explorer. Now, Mike B's pointing out that the File Explorer on Windows will also do this. So you can FTP in your File Explorer. We'll put a link in the show notes, thanks to the Ford McCord in our chat room, how to download Firefox without a web browser that shows pictures and explains exactly how to use this. You launch FTP, and then so you go to the command line, you type FTP. That'll run the Windows FTP program, which you have, believe it or not. And then you'll see a prompt that says FTP greater than. And you type openreleases.mozilla.org, and it'll walk you through the whole thing. The username is anonymous. The password is anonymous. That's literally the username and password. You'll have to browse around using the DOS commands for moving through directories, CD, change directory. You could see what's in the directory by typing LS. Oh, this is good. We're teaching you Unix. Then you switch to binary file mode by typing in type image. Oh, forget it. Then you choose the directory. All right, I'm going to put this in the show notes. It's 12 steps. Don't forget to type by when you're done. But you can do it. Isn't it great to be a geek? Ted is, that was Ted. Now Tony in Los Angeles. Hi, Tony. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you, Leo, for taking my emergency call for help.
For an hour, we've left you on hold. I didn't know it was an emergency. I apologize. What can I do for you?
Okay, well, I am screwed.
Oh, no. Oh, that's bad.
Oh, it's bad. I've got my work computer here. It's the one I do all my billing on, end of the month billing.
Okay.
Okay, so it's Windows XP. I know it shouldn't be, but it is.
That's okay. Work computers often are Windows XP.
Yeah, and it's right now I've got the black screen of apologize for the inconvenience. When Windows didn't start successfully, a recent hardware software change, safe mode, start Windows normally.
It actually apologized for the inconvenience?
Yeah, of course.
Isn't that polite?
Well, you know, since they charge us so much, they better make it easy.
I apologize for the inconvenience. So something changed in your hardware.
Yeah. So
what was that? Do you know?
I might have pulled a thumb drive out at the wrong time.
No, that's not it. No, you're okay. I promise you that did not do this.
Nothing else.
So it thinks this is part of the piracy protection built into Windows. So what is it asking you to do?
Well, it gives me the option to start in a safe mode.
Yeah.
Or just start Windows normally. So you pick either option.
Yeah.
And then it goes to the Windows XP screen, the initializing screen.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, give it five, and then, four, and three. Then, and then it
boom!
Flashes, blue screen, and then it takes you right back to the...
Okay.
Takes you right back to the, the Acer screen.
Same thing happened in safe mode. Have you tried starting up in safe mode?
Yeah.
Same thing. Okay. So what's happening is your hard drive had a problem. And it got damaged. This is the most common problem in computing, and almost all the calls I get where people are having problems with their computer can be traced back to hard drive corruption. Unfortunately, you know, hard drive corruption happens all the time. It's like life. We're all rusting. And your hard drive's rusting, too. Not literally rusting. It's not oxidizing. But
It broke its spine.
Little bits and are flaking off all the time. Believe it or not, everybody laughs at me when I say this. Cosmic rays, I'm not making this up. You've got particles coming from the sun hitting you and all of us all the time. The atmosphere protects us somewhat, but there are still subatomic particles hitting us all the time. And if it hits the hard drive at just the right spot, it can flip a bit. It's all it takes. It takes to turn a one into a zero. Now, the hard drive is like the planet Earth. It's mostly ocean. It's mostly empty space. But if that cosmic ray or some other stray thing flips one bit in a critical portion of the hard drive, like, let's say, the Windows operating system, Windows will start chugging along. It'll get to that. It'll go, and you'll get a blue screen. You'll get exactly what you're getting. So,
the blue screen is a quick flash, and then it goes right back to the... You know, start in safe mode or use the last game.
Yeah, you have a bad system file, a damaged system file. So you're never going to get past that. There's no magic. You got to fix it.
How do I do that?
If you can go to text prompt, one of the you're getting your startup menu, which is great. There's a couple of things. First thing I would do is go into your BIOS setup. When you first start up the computer, unfortunately, Acer, Dell, everybody hides this. But when you see the Acer thing, hit Escape, and it'll say there'll be a message on the screen that says something like, I'm not sure what it'll say exactly.
Well, I went into BIOS.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I didn't see anything.
No, just reset it.
Okay.
The BIOS keeps track of your hardware. See, this error message, I'm so sorry, something happened, your hard drive, your system's changed. That's one thing that concerns me a little bit. So reset.
I'm in the BIOS right now.
Yeah, you'll see reset ESCD or something like that, or system configuration data, something like that. You might have to, there's a lot of pages. You might have to browse through it. But if you can reset the system configuration data, I would do that. That will tell the machine, go through everything and make sure you know what you've got. Because it sounds like what's happened is the machine thinks you've changed the hard drive. Now, this could be part of a side effect of the corruption. But it also could be that there's a physical malfunction, the circuit board on the hard drive or something. Or it could just be when that cosmic ray struck subatomic particle, it didn't strike a hard drive. It struck part of the non-volatile memory that stores the settings. If it hit just right, it's saying, wait a minute, didn't you used to have a Western Digital drive in here? What is this? And that's why you're getting that weird error message.
Well, I have a Windows XP Media Center boot disk here. Is there anything I can
do? No, Media Center won't help you.
Well, this is a Media Center.
Oh, with Media Center. Yeah, okay. So look in your, so here's the steps. That's the last step. First step is to look in your BIOS, reset it. Okay. The only reason I'm saying to do that, I don't normally recommend that, but the only reason I'm doing that is because you're getting this error message. Your hardware's changed.
Okay. What am I resetting in BIOS?
Well, it varies depending on the BIOS. It might say system configuration. It might say set to default. It might say ESCD. That's the system configuration data. But so some
I have load optimal default. So
that's it. Do that. Hold on a second. So we missed.
Sorry, you didn't hear that, Leo.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry too. Okay, hold on a second. All right, we're not done with you.
Okay, thank you.
You're just not on the radio anymore, but you're still in my heart.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
You know, I almost when you started with I got screwed. I almost said, "Don't worry, I am not going to let go of this call until we fix it."
Well, nevertheless, you're justifying the fact that I've been a fan of yours since EDTV days.
Thanks. Well, let's see if we can fix it. I might be making a promise my checkbook can't cash.
If I go to load optimal defaults, will that reset Windows or just the BIOS?
That's the BIOS. So do that. And if you see any other reset commands, I'd still go page through it. And you want to kind of reset everything. That will make the BIOS go back, and just in case. The only reason I say that is because I hear this hardware's changed. That worries me a little bit.
I still think it was the thumb drive yanked out of the port. I think I goofed up. I think I confused what? Them.
Did you see an error when you did that?
Well, no, but this is when that problem started immediately after that.
Well, it is possible, although unlikely, that when you remove the hard drive, you created a static charge,
The thumb drive,
you created a static charge. You can remove thumb drives. The only thing bad that would happen is that the thumb drive might get corrupted if the computer was in the middle of a write. But Windows kind of avoids that. On Macintoshes, you're supposed to eject stuff. On Windows, it doesn't matter. Although they still have that. It is now safe to remove hardware.
I use it religiously.
The only thing you would damage then is the thumb drive, unless, and this is possible, you were rubbing your feet on the carpet as you walked across to the thumb drive, and then you put your hands on the thumb drive and sent 10,000 volts of electricity into the USB port. That's possible. Not likely.
I don't see anything that says about system configuration, so I'm going to try.
Okay, so just load optimal defaults. That's fine. And then the other thing you're going to want, okay, once you've done that and you get to the prompt, go to the command line among, you get your menu choices of boots, go to the command line, and you're going to want to do, if you have that Windows Media Center disk, that's a good thing, because you're going to want to do something called SFC, System Scan, I don't know what it stands for, System File, I don't know. You're going to scan the hard drive. So you do SFC? Space slash at the C prompt, scan now. What this does is it now looks at every system file and makes sure it's not only there but intact. It will only work if you have a Windows disk, because if it finds a missing or corrupt file, it'll say, oh, give me a Windows disk so I can replace it. So it's pointless to do SFC scan now if you don't have that window. But I think that sounds like your Windows disk. So yeah. You go through it. It'll run through. It takes a while. Run through all the system files looking for the one that I'm suspecting maybe is corrupted, and then give you a chance to replace this. If it goes through the whole thing, you've reset the BIOS. You've gone through the scan now. It either replaced files or it didn't see any need to. And you reboot and it's still blue screening.
Safe mode with command prompt, right?
Yep.
Okay, now it's going through the multi-zero, disk zero, you know.
Yeah, it's going to take forever. We'll be long gone before that's done. Then you may want to reinstall. If there's no data on there, you can't afford to lose.
Crucial data. Crucial.
Ah, that's why it's... all right, the good news is... Hold on, because we're now coming back on... We're going to be back on the radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last bit, little teeny bit of the show, and I have been, because I feel so bad for Tony, because this is crucial data he might have lost. I'm still on the line with Tony. We've been talking through the commercial. talking him off the ledge. It's okay, Tony. It's going to be okay. So we're trying to get this machine to boot because there's apparently data on there you don't want to lose.
Crucial data.
So we went through the resetting the BIOS. We did that. We're now running system file checker to make sure that all the systems are okay. That's at the – so you booted to safe mode with command prompt. You type SFC space scan now. This is going to take a few minutes.
But it didn't work.
What do you mean? What happened?
I did safe mode with command prompt, and it started to go through the text, the, you know, disk zero, all that, and it crashed and brought me right back to safe mode with networking, safe mode with command prompt. Whatever I do brings me back to this screen.
Yeah.
I apologize for the convenience.
So what you're going to need to do now – and you could do this yourself if you were sufficiently sophisticated. Otherwise, I'd bring it to a trusted tech guy.
Right.
Is going to need to pull the drive from the laptop.
Uh-huh.
And use another computer to get the data off of it. The data's probably still there. It's hard to say. I mean, it may be the hard drive is completely dead. It may be massively corrupted, maybe just slightly corrupted, but it's definitely a messed up.
Can I boot from my system disk and use recovery console or something like that?
Here's the thing. This is crucial data you don't want to lose.
Yeah.
You start messing with a hard drive, you're running the risk of maybe getting the computer back but losing all your data.
Okay, I have Carbonite. How can I...
Oh, good. Oh, you haven't lost anything then? You should have told me at the beginning.
Sorry.
You're fine. You got a backup.
I have Carbonite and ESET because of you.
Good man. You're going to thank me because... as long as Carbonite was properly configured and working, it's got all those files that you're worried about.
How do I get them back?
Well, you could go to any computer, log onto the Carbonite account, and then look through the files and say, these are the ones I want, or restore all of them. You could do that. You could go up today and buy a new computer. You could get this computer working and do it. But as long as Carbonite's been running, you're good.
Would this be a good time to put a new hard drive and
use
this computer with Windows 7 and see if they could...
Log on. The way Carbonite works, Carbonite is a sponsor, disclaimer here. The way they work is you log on to your Carbonite account on any system and you restore. So one of the advantages of having Carbonite is when you get a new computer, you don't have to worry about moving your data over. You just put Carbonite on it, log in, and say, give me my stuff, man.
Does that work with different operating systems?
Sure.
I'd like to move this XP to Windows 7.
Sure.
So I could take my 32-bit XP media center.
Yeah, it doesn't care.
And put a...
Data don't care.
Can I put 64-bit Windows 7 on it and then have Carbonite?
Yeah, because it's just data, because it doesn't care about... Data doesn't care what bits, how many bits you got.
Oh.
It doesn't restore the operating system or the apps, just the data.
Well, I need to reinstall the apps so that the data makes sense?
Well, eventually you'll need the apps, but at least you got your data. The apps you can get.
Right.
The data, any good backup system, really the most important thing to back up is the stuff you made that you can't go to the store and get.
Right.
The stuff that's unique to you. If that's backed up, then anything else can be fixed and solved. You can download a new copy of the software. You can... get a new computer, you can install a new operating system. The stuff you made, your precious stuff that you made, that's the stuff you want to back up.
Well, because I've been dying to tear this box apart. I've got a Windows 64, a Windows 7 64 disk. I've got a new hard drive.
If I were you, I would be very careful with the old hard drive because that is where the data started. And one thing that sometimes happens, people install Carbonite and think they started and they didn't. So, you know, I would still treat that disk as precious.
Right.
Go ahead and do what you want to do. You could either get a new computer and Windows 8 machine, or you could install Windows 7 on the old machine. If it ran XP, it'll probably run Windows 7 just fine, and then restore from Carbonite. But keep your old hard drive because that's important. And goodness knows a new hard drive's cheap.
I've got all that stuff already. I'm itching to build another.
Do it. Computer. Do it, man. Do it.
I should do it on this rainy day. I've got
perfect day to do it. Keep listening to the radio.
One quick question. I don't understand the difference between imaging and cloning.
Same thing, pretty much. Sometimes cloning is used by hard drive manufacturers to talk about a sector-to-sector clone. So I have a computer. I buy a new hard drive. I want to take the new hard drive, put it where the old one is. So the first thing you do is you connect the computer to the new hard drive and you clone the original hard drive. That means a sector by sector copy of everything that's on the drive, all the setup, all the partitioning. Imaging is a little bit higher level. It knows about the operating system. It knows about files. It only takes one partition at a time. Imaging is making an image of what's in a partition. They're very similar, often have the same result, but cloning is typically, I mean, sometimes cloning is used interchangeably with imaging, but if it's not, then that would be what a cloning is. It's a sector-by-sector clone of the hard drive.
Well, which one is best? Let's say I've got an old laptop.
They have different uses. Cloning is really for, I got a new hard drive, I want to replace the old hard drive, and that's why it's typically the hard drive companies that provide the clone software. It'll clone the software from the old hard drive to the new hard drive. You put the new one in, reboot, and you're exactly the same as you were. And you take that old hard drive and you put it somewhere safe as a backup. And that's what I suggest doing with this existing hard drive. You could also log on to Carbonite right now with a working computer or even a phone and check to see if it's got the files. It's those crucial files that we want to be most cautious about. And yeah, now's a good time to dump Windows XP. It is pretty old. Microsoft stopped supporting it last spring, almost a year ago now. There really haven't been any crucial security flaws. I thought for sure that within the first few months, bad guys would go, great, let's go attack all those XP machines. They didn't, which I guess shows that Microsoft had it pretty locked down. So, but nonetheless, it's expired. It's past its best buy date. So, yeah, get Windows 7. Nice. It was a very nice operating system. Dan in Bakersfield, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Oh, hello, Leo. I've talked to you a few times in the past. I actually don't have a frivolous question. I'm stuck.
Well, like the last guy, I'm here to help. What can I do for you?
Every 5 years for my music studio, I build a new system.
Nice.
And I just did it. And I went, thank you for PC Perspective and the Tech Report recommendations.
Good.
Those were very informative. I learned a lot of stuff that I could never learn from Tom's or any other place.
Good. Yeah. My friend Ryan Schrout runs PC Perspective, does a great job. PCPER.com. A great, nice. They're what we call an enthusiast.
Easy to read pages.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's an enthusiast site. So you use Windows. What music software do you use?
Pro Tools 11. It's not HD, so it's basically the enthusiast software, but it's still a full-blown package.
Yep.
And I also use a PreSonus Studio One version 2.
Okay. I'm running out of time, so quickly get me your question, because I don't want to run out of time before I can answer it.
I have to use a FireWire card for my Focusrite interface.
Uh-oh.
And this new X99 motherboard, Asus.
No more FireWire.
X98.
Yep.
I went with all the recommendations on the motherboard.
You can thank Apple for this. Apple has pretty much phased out FireWire. Unfortunately, they neglected to tell people like Motu and others. And so there's a lot of hardware out there that requires FireWire, especially for audio. You're going to replace it with Thunderbolt. You're probably what you want to do. Well, so you didn't get a Mac, though.
I don't have a Mac, and I don't... Well, my interface is FireWire, so FireWire to Thunderbolt is what I'd have to do.
That's what Mac people do, and they make adapters. On a PC, the problem is USB is not a peer-to-peer system, which FireWire is. So converting USB FireWire to USB is not as easy. You're going to have to – you know what you're going to do? You're going to get a FireWire PCI card. And put that in the...
I have one.
Well, that's how you'll have to do it.
And it doesn't work. And I'm trying to figure out how to diagnose it because there's nothing online.
You got to call PreSonus because this is their hardware. It's probably a driver issue.
That's what I would think. Is there any way I can look in Windows? Because Windows says, hey, we have no conflict. Everything's fine.
Visit the PreSonus website or call PreSonus. It's their hardware that's not working. You are not alone. There are a lot of people. Apple basically killed FireWire. And a lot of companies still make FireWire hardware. A lot of folks like you invested a lot of money in FireWire hardware and now want to use it. But you got to call PreSonus and say, what do I need to make? I bet you it's a driver issue, and it's up to them to provide that. Out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Thank you, Heather Hammond, Nathan Staten. Take care. ASIO drivers. That's what it is. Thank you, sir. No applause necessary. Just cash. No.
It's like the Oscars.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.